right now, it is time for everyone's favorite time of the week, yours and mine alike. It is History Matters, taking a look back at this week in history, and we are joined in the studio by the one and only Scott Washington to help us out, and not even just help us out, to carry the load. Take it away. How are you?
Well, I'll be glad to help in any way I can to make history relevant and meaningful so people don't fall asleep at the wheel.
I don't think we have any chance of that happening.
I don't think that ever happens here at all. Well, you know, every week we kind of go, I don't know, is there anything really happening in the news other than what's in current events? But it really is. There are some exciting things. This is the week, August 26th, 1920, 8 a.m., is when the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution went into effect, giving women the right to vote.
Awesome.
And it became part of the Constitution. It is not like, an add-on. Mm. It's part of the Constitution. That's the amendment process. And that's really exciting. And it was 8 days after it was ratified. They had enough states to ratify it. Mm. And Secretary of State Bainbridge Colby. We always talk about the unusual
names. It's a good history name.
That's right. But they had to determine this in the 19th century because a question came up of when were these amendments going into effect?
Mm.
Now, typically, we always celebrate December 15th, the last great American holiday, as the Bill of Rights Day.
Right.
But
right.
That's because that's the date in 1791 when Virginia ratifies the amendments in 10 of 12, which get enough votes, become the ones we call the Bill of Rights.
Right.
But it's not until around March 1st that Jefferson finally gets the word and says, okay, these are going to affect. But we've all celebrated it as December 15th. Well, I say all. I don't know that.
Those who celebrated on December 15th.
We've been ringing bells, that's right.
But that's an interesting question because 1920 is a presidential election year. You've got
Election Day
coming up in November. If it's
August and
all of a sudden like millions and millions of people are getting the right to vote, you've got to turn that around quick.
And the registration process and how that happened. It wasn't just then that women, of course, have been making a difference, as we know in history.
And there were already a lot of states where women already had the right to vote,
on
a state-by-state level.
But there cannot be any underestimation of how important this is in terms of history.
So what then happened in 1920? Because I don't know that story
of the ratification.
Like what was then the process? How long was the turnaround? Were there?
You know, this is a good question that I think always is why we're so curious. And we look at each other and go, ratification process?
Hang on.
And while Aaron is looking that up, I will celebrate somebody who was born on August 29th, 1882, a name you may not be entirely familiar with, a woman named Connie Guyon, who was born on a plantation near Lincolnton, North Carolina. She was educated at Wellesley College and Cornell Medical School, and she interned at New York City's Bellevue Hospital during the flu epidemic of 1918, and she got her medical degree, and is just a whole number of firsts. She's the first female professor of clinical medicine at an American university, the first female member of the medical board of a New York hospital, and the first living female doctor for whom a major hospital building is named.
Awesome.
You know, that's an amazing thing, and that's the connection to North Carolina. So I don't know if Aaron has found that particular...
I'm still working
on
it.
You know, we are stumped sometimes. We go, well, don't we have this? But I will say, while he's looking that up some more, there's another interesting thing. It's another birthday, August 26th, 1906. A fellow named Albert, Sabine. I think he actually went by a different name at first. Abram Saperstein, and he's born in Poland.
Another good history name.
Yes, exactly. Yes. He's born in Poland. He comes to the United States with his family in 1921, becomes a naturalized citizen in 1930, and that's when he changes his name to Albert Bruce Sabin, or Sabine. And then he gets his medical degree the following year. He serves as a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army during World War II. But what happens is, and this is why this is not a name that's commonly known, except in other parts of the world perhaps, but we always think of Joseph Salk with the polio vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And he used the dead virus strain.
Right.
But it wasn't entirely effective in the intestines. And so this guy, this fellow, Albert Sabine, he actually developed a kind of a weakened version of the virus. And
interesting.
You could take it orally.
Right.
And it was totally effective. In fact, millions of doses were developed and administered in the Soviet Union and other places in the world. And then it was in Cincinnati, they were so desperate that they finally said, okay, well, we'll take a risk on it. The March of Dimes was very hesitant.
Yes, yes.
But this was so good, it completely eradicated polio in Cincinnati as a result.
Interesting. So going back to the 1920 U.S. presidential election,
now back to our
I don't have a lot of details on
in the
60 seconds that I had to look this up. But 9th Amendment gets ratified in August of 1920, and it does go into effect right away. So the November election is the first
this
one.
This is the federal level.
Federal
yes.
level. Women have the right to vote in every single state in the November presidential election. I don't have a lot of details on what the process was of, okay, we've got to get people registered really quickly, but that definitely did happen because the presidential election of 1920 had a huge spike in the number of votes that were cast, about 8 million more votes in 1920 versus 1916, and that's almost entirely attributed to the 19th Amendment and the fact that women had won the right to vote. So now you've got that many more people going to the polls and voting, and that results in a huge spike in votes cast in 1920. And appears, and now I'm just walking into the realm of I don't know what I'm talking about, but it looks like it benefited the Republicans that year because the Democratic vote stayed roughly the same, and pretty much the biggest like jump in the actual election returns was pretty much all on the Republican side. Now, part of that was probably just the country shifting in that direction in 1920, but it might have had a little bit to do with.
Well, you know, and the really really incredible thing is to realize that this amendment, this 19th Amendment, was first introduced to Congress in 1878.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that incredible?
It takes that long,
41 years before it finally goes into effect.
For something that we just take for granted and just think of as of course, right,
and
today.
And the countless women who were so strong proponents.
And had fought for it before it was even introduced in Congress. Like that was a decades-long fight before you even got it introduced. Yeah,
that's right. So that's an incredible struggle. It's an incredible chapter of American history. And about the Constitution, when people say, let's go back to the way the Constitution was written, I go, well, how Amish do you want to get? With all due respect to Amish. But it's like, where do you stop? Because every time the amendments go into effect, they change the Constitution, and they have changed it for the better for many ways. And this is one of those examples.
Yep. Speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters, we've got to talk about one of the other big things that happened this week in history, which is August 28th, Wednesday, the I Have a Dream speech
That's
in the March on Washington.
That's right. Martin Luther King. Yeah. Oh, good. How can we not look at that particular time and say, what a difference one person speaking so forcefully to the issues of the day. And then not only did he have a dream, but it became all of our dreams as well, to have a better society and a better world where we could all join hands and regardless of race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender. It is profound. That's how that speech has had a ripple effect.
Yep. And still an ongoing mission and still an ongoing fight to realize that in practice. But
yes. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, too, that this same week is when we have the issue of the General Fremont in 1861 frees enslaved peoples in Missouri.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And he kind
and
of
gets pushback on that.
Oh,
from
my God,
Lincoln.
Pushback.
Yeah.
He eventually gets relieved of command. And yet it's a year later when September of 1862, when Lincoln finally issues the Emancipation Proclamation, which takes effect in January of 1863. So this is a game changer, and it's so important when we look at, you know, what matters in history are these moments. And kudos to General Fremont for taking that initiative, even though he got some consequences from it, but you know, he was ahead. He saw what was coming.
Yep.
He knew that was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And of course it is.
Absolutely.
I would say that we have a radio issue here. 1922. There's a station, WEAF.
Weef.
New York City, that broadcasts the first paid commercial. And it's $50 for 10 minutes about an apartment complex.
Man, yeah. I'm sure everyone was still listening after the ninth minute. And in addition to
this room is really good for couches.
In addition to the amenities in the kitchen, wait until you see the bathroom.
Yes, exactly.
Let us take a look in your mind as we open the door and see the chrome.
That's right. Yeah,
How much longer do I have to talk about
that's
this?
That's right. They probably had an orchestra. I don't know. We don't have a recording of that, but it would have been really something. Like, now you can hear my footsteps. You hear that sound effects. Yeah. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. You got to have the sound effects and the Foley artists.
Yeah, the door,
and yeah, exactly.
Oh, the view is stunning. Yes. Yeah. Well, there's a couple other
things. Don't worry. We can WD-40 that creak in the door.
2005, of course, the storm, Hurricane Katrina.
Yes, this day in history
that's
is
right.
when it hit.
And,
yeah.
you know, that's we're thinking about the people down in Florida right now who are preparing, and hopefully there will be some abatement of that storm, Dorian coming. But still, you know, it's this time of year. Mm-hmm. We have to remember that these things happen, and you try to be prepared. And, of course, who would have guessed that what happens in New Orleans becomes this bellwether moment to say we have to be looking at what's happening on climate change and how important that is. There's another thing that's really interesting that happens, and I'm going to go back a little bit now to the Civil War era, 1857. Most people don't know this. August 29th, 1857, there is a trial that's held. And there is a lawyer representing a fellow who's accused of murder.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And so Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, our president, is the attorney, and he starts questioning this witness who said, oh, I saw the whole thing. And really, how is that? Oh, it was so bright because of the moonlight. Well, Lincoln looks up the almanac, and turns out it's pitch black. And because of that, the man is acquitted.
Because it's a new moon and there's no
moon
in the sky?
There's no moon, so he couldn't have seen it. He could not have identified it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we didn't know that there was this element of Perry Mason.
It's
and
like
Abraham
a My
Lincoln.
Cousin Vinny level cross-examination there.
Yes, I think that's a...
What are these magic grits?
You see, this is the kind of jazz riff on history that people just think, oh, yeah, I remember that movie. Yeah, that's right.
If you're telling the truth about that, I'm going to be president someday.
let's see. There's a couple things, too. A birthday on the 30th, 1797. A woman is born. And on a cold, rainy day in 1816, it's a year without a summer, and because of an eruption
of
Mount Tabor that we talked
eruption,
about last
yep,
week,
yep.
She's challenged to write a horror story. They don't have anything else to do.
Yes.
She's in Italy, okay, I will. And of course, that begins one called The Modern Prometheus. Her name's Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley.
Wollstonecraft, yeah.
And, of course, we know it better today as Frankenstein.
Frankenstein,
yeah.
Yep. Awesome.
So,
amazing how the weather affects literature, right? Like, you sit down. One of my favorite stories about, like, the origin of a book is E.L. Doctorow's Ragtime. And this isn't a weather story, but it's just the interesting origins of a book. He's sitting in his house, and he has to write because he's a writer, and that's what you're supposed to do when you're a writer. And he just complete writer's block. He has no idea what to write about. Sitting at his desk, and he looks up at the wall, and he's staring at the wall, and he says, "Ah, the heck with it. I'm just going to write about the walls." So he starts writing about the walls of his house.
Oh, really?
And then he starts writing about the house. And then he starts writing about when the house was built, which was 1902.
Gosh.
And then he starts writing about 1902. And everything just kind of blows up from there.
Really?
And now it's one of the greatest novels of the 20th century.
My gosh.
And it was from an author having writer's block and just starting to write about the thing that was literally in front of him, which was the wall.
Wow.
And Mary Shelley, same story. And like,
yes.
Frankenstein would not have existed if they weren't.
That's right.
They were on vacation,
they
right?
Were
they were
vacation.
Supposed to be
That's
on vacation
right.
enjoying the
Weather's
outdoors,
bad.
And then it was just bad weather, so they sat down and challenged each other to come up with a horror
the radio
story.
Radio had not been invented yet,
exactly.
so they couldn't listen to WCHL. Yeah,
they couldn't listen to WEEF either.
That's right. No. For that 10-minute
For the
segment
10-minute commercial.
On the apartment complex. So.
And then the balcony
you know,
is fantastic.
I dare you. This is truth or dare in the 19th century.
I dare you to write
a horror story. Okay, all right. That's pretty good. Let me sharpen my pencil.
Speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters. We got time for one more. What do you got?
Well, I don't think most people know this, that we think of earthquakes, we think of California, but in 1869, August 31st, at 9:50 p.m., the largest earthquake ever recorded on the East Coast of the United States takes place in Charleston, South Carolina. Mm. Destroys building, 150 people lose their lives. It's actually felt as far north here in North Carolina. The bell, supposedly in Asheville City Hall, actually rang because the ground was shaking. Mm. Yeah, we don't think about that. We think of California.
Right.
That's the place. No, here on the East Coast, in fact, there are some reports that even Hillsborough here in Orange County was affected. So, yeah, it's amazing to think that there are not only the earth-shattering things, earth-moving things that happen literally, but then you have, like, I Have a Dream, where that really shakes things up in a profound way that's as movable as any earthquake, and you might call it a history quake.
And the 19th Amendment as well.
And the 19th Amendment.
There
yes,
you go. Bringing us back. Full circle. Scott Washington, History Matters, as always. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.